to win more. But I guess with that, we'll go ahead and get started with the – wait, do we have – okay, I see Joel. With the – oh, no, it's Diane. That's my partner here on this committee these days. Okay. I am Joel with the Waterworks Park. But anyway, we'll go ahead and get started with the Des Moines Waterworks Planning Committee today on February 2nd. And we'll just have folks introduce themselves as they speak. And with that, we'll start with the 5-year water quality initiatives, unless anybody has anything else to mention beforehand.
You know, Andrea, I might just cue it up for Jen for 1 minute here and then hand it off to her for her presentation. But a couple of points I want to make here is when Jen came back, one of the primary initiatives that I asked her to work on was figuring out what we were going to do in the water quality space in terms of Des Moines Waterworks. What is our role? We're all familiar with the water quality challenges that we've had for a long time and some of our other initiatives in recent years, including the lawsuit. And so now isn't the time for those kind of things where we weren't expecting there to be any big legislative movement on the water quality front. We weren't planning to file suit in the near term. And so we were looking for what is it that we are going to do? You know, what can we do to make progress? And then what do we want our focus to be? And we talked a lot. We've met with a lot of folks. Jen can elaborate on that if she wants. But we've decided to work a little closer to home, work with folks who, many of whom are our customers, who we have relationships with, and see what we can't do in that arena to promote and improve water quality in the state. And so Jen has come up with some really creative ideas. I'm excited for her to share those with the board today. And with that, I think I'll just hand it off to Jen and let her take it from there. And then we can have as much discussion as you like after she's shared her thoughts. So Jen.
Okay, thank you, Ted. I need to be able to do screen sharing. There we go. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Are you seeing what you need to see?
Yes.
Okay, awesome. Thank you. so thank you, Ted, and thank you to a couple of the board members who have already reviewed some of these priorities and given feedback. And today, my partner in this presentation will be Melissa Walker. And if you haven't had a chance to get to know Melissa yet, she'll be presenting the second part of our presentation today. So she's our public relations consultant, and she's going to take over when we talk about tactics. So let's just dive right in. So a roadmap for what we're going to talk about today. First of all, I'd like to talk briefly about our selection of these priorities and how we got to the priorities that we've chosen. Normally, when we do this, we talk a lot about our water quality issues and the severity of our source water degradation and things like that. I'm going to cut to the chase with this group because I think you're well aware of a lot of our challenges, but I do have one slide at the beginning, which I hope will demonstrate the importance of telling our story, because a lot of people don't understand our particular challenges. Then I'm going to introduce the priorities for the next 5 years. Melissa is going to talk about the communications and public relations tactics that we propose around these priorities, and then we hope to have plenty of robust discussion and feedback from you all. So let's dive in. The importance of telling our story. So we, as Ted said, I think we are at about 49 or 50 different groups and organizations now. And he has been very patient and cooperative in all of those meetings and helping us get to where we needed to be before we could do these. And yesterday I said, did you have a good day? And he said, I think I spent 6 hours with you in Zoom meetings. So if you think that's a good day, then yes, that's a really good day. So really quickly, I'm going to touch on these. So the perfect storm is here in Iowa, we are ranked 49th in the amount of public lands, which means private ownership of all of the agricultural lands in our watersheds, puts those under, you know, their own particular interest in doing conservation practices. So private ownership plus primarily production agriculture, plus voluntary participation on implementing those best management practices equals a perfect storm in our two watersheds. So the Des Moines River watershed drains 3.2 million acres. 78% of that is planted in corn and soybeans. The Raccoon River watershed drains 2.3 million acres. And 73% of that is in corn and soybeans. And so I don't think I need to recount when you have a leaky system like that, and that's our two watersheds, that has significant implications to our source water. 50 to 70% in our watersheds, the lands have non-operator landowners. That's huge. If you're not cherishing and building up that soil and planning to give it to your next generation and the one after that, that makes certain decisions different than the ones you would if you're passing along to your kids and grandkids. So non-operator landowners at some parts of North Raccoon are 85%. Are non-operator landowners. So that's a huge thing in the balance up in the watersheds. So tile drainage, I think we're all pretty aware of what that situation has brought about. We did meet with a legislator.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
So do we have any idea of those non-operator landowners? How many do not live in Iowa?
I think we don't know how many do not live in Iowa, but we're getting a better idea of which ones do live in our service area, which is one of our interesting projects that we're going to undertake. So that's a great question.
Well, I just wonder, because we do operate under the fiction in this state that everybody is on a family farm. Mm-hmm.
The family farming ethos.
Yeah.
No, that gets right to the point. Thank you, Diane. Proliferation of confined animal feeding operations. There's over 1,000 of them in the Raccoon River watershed alone. According to the CDC, animal feeding operations produce a huge number of pollutants. I won't get into all the details, which are unsavory, but pathogens, pesticides, hormones, organic matter, nutrients. So all of that is headed our way down from those two watersheds as well. And then you couple that with the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy, which relies on voluntary participation. Those are the stories that it's so important for us to tell people, not only in Iowa, but at the federal level. I think it's pretty jaw-dropping when we go over some of these facts with them. So again, the data collection phase, as I call it, my charge was to find a pathway between litigation and state legislation to improve water quality. At least that's the focus for the next 2 to 5 years, and then assess our progress. So we talked with more than 45 groups, agencies, and organizations. And Ted and I just, we gained so much information from meeting with all of those people, very diverse mix of stakeholders. But our main takeaways as far as our work in this space, there's a lot of work being done, and people are earnestly trying to make things work in many of these watersheds. But what we're finding is that there's a lack of shared framework. So there's a chaotic approach out in the watershed. Some people are following this grant opportunity and doing this over here. And some people are following another grant opportunity and doing this over here and different partners. There's also a difference of opinion on implementation and priorities. So literally, we would finish a meeting with one organization, and then we would meet with the next one, and they would say, oh, no, you don't want to do that. Like, okay, we're taking notes on this. We also find there's a lack of organized statewide funding. So while the nutrient reduction strategy has a useful science assessment contained in it, as we all know, it does not contain an implementation strategy. So we find that there's insufficient funding and there's not a framework for implementation. Also, we want to have a sensitivity to optics with whom we partner. So if we're going to radically collaborate, as I've said a few times, we want to collaborate with people who are coming to the table in good faith and actually want to make changes to improve water quality. And that means not keeping things exactly the way they are. And so, you know, we want to assure our customers and ratepayers that public health and protecting the safety of their drinking water is of utmost importance to that. And so some of the people that we partner with will help us in those endeavors. And then there's an ongoing lack of trust in the watershed. So I go to watershed planning meetings and so on. And I think that as a result of the lawsuit, there's still some lingering mistrust of our organization. And after 30 years of trying to improve the water quality in our source water, there's also some sort of a lack of trust. It goes two ways, right? So we've been trying to work on water quality issues since LD was here back in the late 80s and 90s. So based upon all of those takeaways, we decided to select our water quality priorities based on partnerships and collaborations that use innovative approaches to produce incremental results in the near term and large-scale results in the long term when adopted on a wider scale. So that's our guiding principle. And we identified three areas that would have the most impact for our source water and over which we would have the most influence. So we determined land use practices on row crop ground, managing ag tile drainage effluent, and reducing harmful algal blooms. So, and how we choose our partners and our collaborators in this space, our guiding principles for priority selection, we are going to engage closer to home, as Ted said. We want partners who trust us and who we trust. Ideally, they're probably people who drink our water and who have skin in the game of protecting our source water. We want innovative ideas versus maintaining the status quo. There's only one of me and one of Ted, and so we have to use our time wisely with partners who actually want to make change and want to come to the table with us in good faith. And then, of course, we're thinking about what can realistically be accomplished in 2 to 5 years. Even if we execute every one of these to its fullest potential, is it going to reduce the tons of nitrogen that go by our intakes in 5 years? No, it's not. But if we can see that there's a successful pathway forward after 2 or 3 years, then we'll hopefully know which pathways are going to work and we can do them on a wider scale. That's our hope. So here's the big unveiling. So you recall there's three areas that we're going to be focusing on. The first one is to influence land use change on farm grounds in our watersheds. So all of these ideas and projects that you're going to be seeing already have interest from other partners and stakeholders. And I think 100% of the people that we've presented these ideas to have been excited about them and willing to work with us and excited about working with us. So the first one is non-operator landowners. We did a search of our zip codes in our 4-county service area. Amy Kaler wouldn't remember maybe how many zip codes there were, dozens and dozens. And so we worked with one of our partners to overlay a database of public records of how many people in our service area own farms of 80 acres or larger in Iowa. And that first sweep yielded 5,000 people. So do they all live in our two watersheds? No. So our next step is to weed that down and figure out how many of those people live in our watersheds. And then we have a plan for how to engage with them. And it's going to involve education and outreach, maybe a small symposium that we can sponsor with Practical Farmers of Iowa and some others. So we're excited about the non-operator landowners. They may not have even been approached before. And so they're now our customers, and we think that we'll have a persuasive story to tell them. The second one is urban developers. So we're thinking, think of the large development companies. You know them all. There's probably 6 or 7 of them that come to mind right now. Come to find out, they farm a lot of ground in the metro. And so we think we also have a story to share with them, which is, we know that you're going to scrape the topsoil off anyway in 5 or 10 years, but maybe we could work together to come up with ideas of how to save that soil and hold those nutrients in place and use fertilizer more wisely between now and then. And so we've just had some initial meetings with one of the developers, and it was really revealing. And I think that at least this organization is open to ideas. We met with their land manager who farms 5,000 acres for them. He was also open to these ideas. So again, come to find out there's already partners in the space working and they're willing to bring us along. So for example, we met with the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, of which Andrea is very familiar. They're already working with some of these developers and how can we better use land that's in the floodplain, for example, in the metro? And so are there ways that Des Moines Water Works can grab a hold of those ideas? The third one I'll mention today, one of the main ones, is our Polk County saturated buffer effort. I say our, but it was the brainchild of the Soil and Water District, along with John Swanson and Bob Rice at Polk County. So this is, I think we've talked about it before, but it's an innovative funding model and it's an innovative implementation model that is putting saturated buffer treatments at the end of tile lines at rapid pace, faster than any other program has done. So we're excited about that. We have regular meetings with John Swanson and Bob Rice. They are expanding the saturated buffer effort into a couple of watersheds, and one of them is one of ours. So we're hoping that Beaver Creek becomes maybe the next extension of this project. And we're working with them to see how we can support and promote that project. Continued influencing land use change on farm ground and our watersheds. So I'm cooking up some possible ideas. I met with the Greater Des Moines Botanical Garden last week, and they're going to be developing some adjacent property and maybe even having demonstration plots, I believe, on that property. And so I am interested in possibly pitching an idea to people, to organizations like the Botanical Garden. Are there ways that we can form an alliance to educate people who maybe ride by on the bike trail about what we can all do to restore our source water? Influencing the placement of fertilizer. We've had a couple of interesting meetings with retailers, farmers cooperatives, believe it or not, who are absolutely supportive of doing wiser implementation of fertilizer management. And so we're excited about those. I don't have a project around that one yet, but I suspect it will become part of the other projects. The last one is a cool one. It's another innovative one. We just had a meeting this morning with three people from Heartland Cooperative. It's called the Urban Ag Seeding Project, and it was a model from Kansas in which funding was secured and municipalities buy up these huge $500,000 high boy machines that plant cover crop seed, and then they lease them out to ag retailers, and they can apply many, many multiple hundreds more acres per year than is currently being done in using this model. So this is again in the beginning stages, but this project, it has probably 10 partner groups in it, and very exciting, very new, and they're happy to be working with us. Heartland Cooperative is all in on the other ideas that I showed you on the previous slide. They want to be part of it. They're excited about it. They said it works really well with their own goals, and that they could be the boots on the ground for us talking with the growers. The second priority is to promote and support drainage district modernization that benefits all watershed stakeholders. So the first two, given the current political climate and just how the watersheds are coordinated, what we're doing with the first two priorities is just starting to normalize this talk around common sense solutions to some tile drainage management. So for example, let's allow drainage district funds to be used for practices that produce stacked benefit. For example, let's have them be able to use their funds to install riparian buffers along waterways. Some of these things are just common sense approaches that other states are already doing. And so when we talk to legislators and policymakers and other stakeholders, we're just going to start talking about these common sense ideas. And within 2 to 5 years, we're hoping that they might gain some traction in terms of policy and law. The third one was Ted's idea, and it's a cool one and it's fun. There are actually 56 drainage districts in Polk County. And so we thought, what if we could call upon the trustees of a local drainage district and present the idea to them of making a model drainage district, a saturated drainage district where we have an intersection of the board of trustees of the district and with the growers and the landowners, maybe 15 or 20 of them would be in that drainage district, and then other partners, and just throw everything at it that you can think of, saturated buffers and riparian buffers and cover crops. get the buy-in and make this a snapshot for the rest of the state and show them that we can do it and that it doesn't make a difference in nitrate concentrations. We would partner with, for example, Dr. Levi's group at Drake University and have some sort of a monitoring and modeling project. Again, this is John Swanson, took the ball and ran with this one as well. We think he might even have a drainage district in mind in one of our watersheds. So we're having ongoing meetings with them about this model drainage district idea. Kind of excited about that one. Heartland Cooperative was also very excited about that one. Third, you know, you're well aware of all of the issues that we've had with microcystin the past 2 years in particular with harmful algal blooms and microcystin. So how do we grab a hold of that? At the state level, again, digitizing manure management plans with geospatial mapping. Right now, all of those reports are submitted just in lengthy, lengthy written documents, and there's no geospatial way of understanding in real time where all of that's going and how much and how it's being applied. The first bullet point is not something that's going to happen this legislative session, nor is it likely to happen next. But again, we're starting to normalize these common sense approaches to managing our watersheds. Again, support allocation of funds for manure management. This would come through the Department of Natural Resources, who has had huge budget cuts the last 10 years. So we would be supportive of allocation of those funds. The last one is coalition building around harmful algal blooms. So we hope to build a movement with diverse partners. For example, Iowa Learning Farms, they're associated with Iowa State University, going out and partnering with us on how to reduce the practices that cause harmful algal blooms and install better ones. If you own a pet, if you have cattle, this is your issue. Harmful algal blooms are your issue. If you are someone who would like to swim at our public beaches, this is your issue. So one of our acquaintances here at Waterworks is a member of the Iowa Cattlemen Association. He said he would be happy to pitch an idea of getting them on board with harmful algal blooms because, again, a danger to calves. So we'd like to build a coalition statewide, build a movement around harmful algal blooms reduction. And then at the national level, I had this idea that maybe we could use the new administration and the new EPA to partner with Secretary Vilsack, who has Iowa ties, and somehow use that synergy to bring focus to the Upper Mississippi River Basin and the dire and serious and alarming situation we have with harmful algal blooms. I'm thinking something like the Everglades Initiative or the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, something big and something well-funded and something that has regulatory backstops. And so what we're starting to do, I started a spreadsheet. I think we've met with maybe 8 groups at the national level on these issues. And what we're finding is there's already initiatives afoot. Some people are ahead of us that have some power and influence at the national level. So we're still doing homework on this one, but I suspect our job will be to tell our story. And we're the only ones who can tell the story of Des Moines Waterworks and what we see as solutions to the problem, and we're doing that. And I think it's just a shock to a lot of people who are hearing our story. So again, at the national level, we've had meetings with some of the folks listed here. Healthy Gulf is an environmental group in Louisiana. We've talked to the American Waterworks Association and talked to their policy people in DC, who I don't believe we've ever told our story in the way that Ted and I did at that meeting. We are talking with the Upper Mississippi River Basin Association. They've already got an initiative started. So I think this is going to be a great idea. And I think our job, like I said, is going to be to tell our story and be the placeholders for clean water, for the voice of clean water. At the bottom, the last bullet is support regenerative agriculture and source water protection in the Farm Bill. The American Waterworks Association elbowed its way to the table and got a 10% source water expenditure out of the last Farm Bill has to be spent on source water protection, and that's great. It would be great to see that expanded and have a little bit more definition to it, and then somehow start talking about Farm Bill being something other than production and more regeneration and sustainability. We have a very small, little incremental piece of ways we might be able to influence that, but I think it's good to have it on our list. And then before I pass the microphone over to Melissa,
Jennifer, sorry to interrupt.
No, that's
can
fine.
You, the 10% allocation through the farm bill, can you state that again? Tell me, I didn't fully understand that.
Yeah, so so in a shift in some ways, the in the last farm bill, and I don't have it in front of me, sorry, so I can't read it front to you, but 10% of expenditures need to go towards source water protection, and I can send you a link about that. So we have a seat on one of the panels for the state technical committee, which is through the NRCS, and that's who administers those funds. And so before I came, Laura Sarcone and actually Christina Murphy from West Des Moines Water Works were working hard on recommendations for how to spend that 10% in our watersheds. So that's really helpful. So source water protection in this context would mean working with farmers to implement cover crops and other such practices that would hold the soil and nutrients in place.
So, Jen, is it fair to say that 10% of the funds that are expended on these federal programs, REAP, or I don't know what all the programs are, but 10% of the funds that are expended in those programs are supposed to be directed towards source water protection?
Yes, and I'll have to look up the exact wording, but yes. I think that amounts to $7 million in the last farm bill for us, and we are in one of the priority watersheds, but let me get you more information about that.
I would imagine a lot of funds already kind of qualify for that, whether it's cover crops or buffer strips, things like that. But
I think the good news is that it has to be earmarked for that, which is good for us.
All right. Thank you.
And then expectation setting. So I'm really not someone who has my whole office papered with all these giant, huge 3-foot long post-it notes, and then I never get any of it done. Although I'm sure Ted's like, how are we going to bring all this together? So he and I have been talking a lot about deliverables. And so we're working on ways of measuring the success of those particular projects. Measures of success are different with different people. So sometimes we leave a meeting and I like go over to Ted's office. I'm like, that was amazing. Did you get all that stuff that we learned from that meeting? It's like, boy, I'm not sure it went that well. So I think telling our story at the national level and at the regional level and getting meetings with these people, we just had a meeting with NRCS today, 3 people from DC spent time hearing our story. So I think how we measure success, what our deliverables are, and then understanding that we're going to be assessing this in 2 or 3 years and see how we're doing. And then we'll be back to the board along the way to tell you how it's going so that you can, you know, assess how you think it's going. So just so you know that Ted and I talk a lot about what our expectations are and what we can hope to accomplish. So would you like to talk about any questions you have now, or would you like me to invite Melissa up to talk about our tactics?
Let's take a minute to see if anybody has any questions on this piece before we switch gears.
Just a comment that I appreciate this information again. I know I've seen a bit of it. It's hard to keep track of which meeting now, but I really like and support the focus kind of close to home. It seems like we know we're facing a lot of uphill battles, and especially the farther we get away from the metro. So let's see if we can build some models for some of these practices close to home, where we have good relationships and good partners, and try to expand out from that. So I applaud your strategy, all of your strategy there, and excited to see it.
Thanks, Joel. Anybody else have any thoughts or questions?
Jennifer, just great work. I mean, this is what we've been looking for as a roadmap. So thank you.
Thanks, Sue. It's fun.
We move on and talk a little bit about tactics here, Andrea.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. Melissa, why don't you give us a quick overview of the tactics you have in mind?
Try to talk fast, Ted. Melissa Walker, I'm the communications consultant that the utility has hired if we haven't yet met. So thanks, Jen, for starting this conversation. As with most big issues that affect Des Moines Water Works, our new communication strategy is to create a public relations campaign to direct our messaging and to talk a little bit about how we will utilize the different communications tactics that the utility has and to create a timeline. for communication based on directives both from the board and TED, as well as the necessity of sharing the news. So part of that plan is an overview of the PR campaign. And in this case, water quality, as you well know, is an ongoing issue for Des Moines Water Works. Both of the water sources that the utility uses to supply its customers are contaminated. And this makes utilities' jobs to provide safe drinking water even more important, but also more difficult and costly. And we're looking at the utility and calling ourselves the voice of water. And as a result, the utility has a responsibility to educate the public about these concerns and contamination issues, but also to share the solutions in the partnerships that Jen and Ted are proposing. And that's the intention of this PR campaign. We've outlined some communication objectives that we'll talk about through this campaign. Obviously, we want to launch the PR campaign to share not only the environmental issues, but also the utility's role and possible solutions. And we want to inspire the public to become an advocate for clean water. And this is kind of that place between litigation and legislation, and it's an opportunity to turn the tide of public opinion a little bit and inspire the public to become advocates in this process. Source water continues to degrade, even though the lawsuit is over, it's still a concern. So we want the public to know that this is still an issue. We want to reiterate that while Des Moines Water Works' job is more difficult and costly, the finished water is still safe to drink. So that's important through this process. We want to show the utility is solution-based, that it is being proactive in the form of this radical collaboration and these partnerships with like-minded organizations, and to show that there's action that can be taken to make improvements, but that it takes people thinking downstream. And so with that concept, we're proposing a social media marketing concept called Think Downstream Thursdays that will allow us to utilize the utility's communications platforms, specifically YouTube and social media, to share Des Moines Water Works' story, the challenges it faces, the steps it takes to produce safe drinking water, and then some of those solutions and partnerships that Jen talked about. And in doing so, to instill public confidence and trust in the utility. And we want to position Des Moines Water Works as the science-based expert about Iowa's source water quality. And there are a lot of people and groups out there, you all know, with big pockets who can buy media advertising. So it's really important that the utility show the science behind these things, behind the water quality issues, and that Des Moines Water Works has the experts in-house to share this information. And then finally, we're proposing that the utility execute a 30th anniversary event with education in the form of speakers and presentations and tours of the utility that will mark the installation of the nitrate removal facility. And this will occur in March of 2022. And it'd be important for us to work with like-minded organizations and other entities for a multitude of reasons. And a big thank you to Andrea and Graham, if he is on here, for suggesting some of these. And Jen and I are actually meeting with Andrea next week to discuss some of this a little bit more. But we really need to maximize our platform and our voice. And by partnering with some of these entities, and know that this is not an all-inclusive list, there'll be other groups added to this as well. But this is simply a snapshot of a diverse cross-section of entities. And we want to be able to leverage their audiences, as well as Des Moines Water Works through its communications platforms, in order to reach more people beyond just ratepayers.
I have a question here. Mm-hmm. So the Iowa Association of Water Agencies, the Municipal Utility Association, and the Rural Water Association, my question is, we are not the only water utility with these issues. So how active are they and what are they doing, because they cover the state? So how do we get them to become more active in these issues?
That's a great question. Thank you, Diane. I can tell you really quickly one example on my list that stuck to the wall. We have met with the Iowa Association of Municipal Utilities, their leadership, Troy, and a couple of other people. they agreed to partner with us on what we're calling a sort of nitrate collective. and we want to build a community of utilities across the state who we have to treat or blend for nitrate. And so what we envision is you could get some educational credits, get some education, have networking, hopefully yet this year, for the utilities who are in the same situation we are. And our intent
is that not taking place? Have we not?
There's a community of these people. Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, per se, a community of utilities who have to treat or blend. And so, yeah, to your point, it's like, it's not just Des Moines Water Works. We want people to talk to their legislators about it across the state and talk to their own ratepayers about it and build this safe place to talk about it. So I'm not aware that there's that sort of collective of just that section. There may be, but
there's not, Jen. In fact, most of those smaller utilities don't have a voice. They don't have the data to support a voice. That, you know, they don't have the resources. They do what they can do to treat the water, and that's about all. But we're going to try to give them a voice by getting IMU to help them and to create this group and to provide them information and help them know what to say and who to say it to. And we're hoping we can create a voice for them going forward, but there's nothing like that exists today.
Yeah, Jen and I were actually talking about that earlier in a meeting that we had. We know what's happening with all utilities downstream as well. So Jen, if you wanna go to the next slide. So we understand that obviously that our media bandwidth is only so much. So we really want to utilize the utilities communications platforms to disseminate information and to do so in a strategic manner. So we plan to post during pertinent events such as World Water Day and the National Drinking Water Week. We're starting the Think Downstream Thursday social media campaign, and our new social media consultant will be very instrumental in helping with the messaging and the actual physical posting of these ideas, which will show things such as water sampling and testing, the work in the lab, you know, the rush of the ice melt in the spring, which might cause a spike in nitrate levels, the harmful algal blooms in Sailorville with the Des Moines River, or when the Des Moines River rather is unusable. So really some of those things that are visuals, and this will give us an opportunity to tell the utilities story. We wanna utilize the YouTube channel for any video content that's created. The website will have a tab specifically for our videos and the Think Downstream Thursday information. We want to communicate this in written form as well. So that'll come in the form of the H2O line, the customer newsletter and press releases. And then when we launch this, we want to have some meetings with editorial boards and reporters to discuss the importance of water quality in the state. And not only do this at the local and state level, but the Midwest level and the national level as well. And leverage national media also to tell our story and encourage action at the federal level. And we know that the spotlight comes to Iowa every 4 years for the Iowa caucuses. So media outlets are interested in what happens here. And Iowa, obviously a huge farm state and a big contributor to the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. So we believe that this will attract media attention, not only here statewide, but in the Midwest and nationally as well. Happy to take any questions that you might have.
I just wanted to tell the group that when I worked at the Environmental Defense Fund, I worked with Michael Regan, who is now the EPA administrator. And I think it's interesting. He left the Environmental Defense Fund and he went into the state administration there, took the head environmental job, but it's interesting because it was in North Carolina, and North Carolina has a lot of the same issues that we have with confinement. So he will probably understand a lot of our issues here at the EPA.
That's a great connection. Are you in a position? We'll talk offline. Maybe we can have an introduction. Thank you.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So I guess what I just want to say is that I feel very excited to hear both presentations about our priorities and our strategies behind them. They they feel like actionable items that just aren't on giant post-it notes, but that then get put into a plan that then sits on the shelf. But they're actionable items that we're already seeing work being done on them, and that's very exciting. And they're initiatives that feel doable and to me measurable, and in some cases even replicable. Really the passion and energy that I'm sensing from everyone on staff behind them feels like we're going to get them done, and that it almost feels like we're going to make progress and have an impact tomorrow with the energy I'm sensing off of you guys, even though I realize that, you know, reversing the course that Iowa has been on is going to take time. But I appreciate the work that you guys have already started to make these connections, to have these conversations, and to come up with a plan that not only feels like it's going to make a real difference, but also to do it in a way and have a communication strategy that feels like we're going to be able to make it digestible to our ratepayers and other partners to understand why we're doing these things and the importance of doing these things. So we just applaud your efforts and want to get my thoughts in before I open it up to anybody else for comments or questions.
Awesome. Thank you, Andrea. I appreciate that.
Andrea, I ditto your enthusiasm. I think this is wonderful. And Jen, before Secretary Vilsack left the secretary position, before he was our final keynote speaker for the partnership trip, and he really tasked Iowans. He said, you know, I am so embarrassed to be the secretary of agriculture when I sit at my desk and I have an award for Minnesota and all of the surrounding states that were receiving awards for what they were doing. So I think the strategy of visiting with him, he's an ally. This has been his thing for a long time. So I love everything you're saying. And I was sending Ted a note. I mean, the fact that Steve Brewer's company is involved and that you're talking to him when, you know, it was Steve Brewer and Larry James Jr. that co-chaired the whole partnership soil and water issue. So that seems like a logical one, because I know you've wanted to resurrect that, the work of that group. So thank you.
Thank you, Sue.
I know I gave you both some feedback the other day when we had a meeting about this. So and I appreciate it again. I really appreciate the strategic and kind of tailored approach to things like social media, which, as we discussed, can be a real, you know, a time drain if not done strategically and with an eye towards kind of gauging the engagement we're getting from them. So I appreciate that effort. I like Think Downstream Thursdays. I think that's evolved a little since last I saw it. And so I think that's a nice touch. And someone mentioned the caucuses as well. And I guess it's never too early to start thinking about them, but maybe a little too early to start thinking about them, but my wife's in politics. So the caucuses are always around the corner. But, you know, put a pin in it, but later, you know, maybe a couple of years from now, maybe we're talking about holding some kind of candidate forum or thing like that, where we can have some of the candidates talking about water quality and draw some attention to it that way. So I'm sure it's something you guys have thought about, but
I'd like to say I thought of that, but I haven't, but I really like it.
When the time comes, Joel, we'll recruit you to help us with that.
Sure thing.
Well, if there are no other questions, I would just echo the comments. Appreciate Jen's efforts here and Melissa's to help us with our tactics. I think they have a great plan put together. Now it's just implementation, right? Andrea, the next item on the agenda is actually review and discuss the planning committee duties. And Graham had asked that each of the committees take a look at their duties as stated in the board policy manual. Given the time, we could do one of two things. We could take a look at those duties now and discuss, or we could share those with you and Diane for consideration before the next meeting. I'm not sure what your preference is there.
Let's go ahead and share those with Diane and me. to comment on them. Okay. And then we can discuss or take
action. Sure.
Is that okay with you, Diane?
Oh yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
I think that's a cat. I don't know what kind of animal I keep seeing. Yeah.
to give her any attention or.
We'll take care of that. Get those sent out for discussion. My comments, Andrea, if I could, I would reserve until the end of the next meeting, as is typical.
Absolutely. We'll take some time to provide for any public comments. I'm not sure if I see any public on the call.
I don't believe so.
Okay. Well, with that, then we'll go ahead and conclude the planning committee portion of today's meetings. And I will turn it over to the customer.